From Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the local edition. I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me. Election Day is 5 days away. Early voting is underway in New York State. Sunday's the last day for that. And Radio Catskill's election coverage continues tonight with a look at the race for town supervisor in the town of Thompson. We heard from incumbent Bill Reber last night. That interview is up at Radio Catskill's election page. Tonight, we will hear from the challenger in that race. Patricio Rubio talks to Scott Mace in the second half of the program. Before that, we have an in-depth report from Radio Catskill's Genevieve Hartnett about the increasing amount of pregnant mothers being taken into custody by ICE and placed into detention centers. That's all coming right up, but first, we do have news from Albany, where New York Attorney General Letitia James continues to push back on federal investigations into her affairs. WNYC's Jimmy Vielkind reports the latest action relates to the acting U.S. attorney in Albany.
Sources tell WNYC that lawyers for James are fighting a subpoena by arguing that acting U.S. Attorney John Sarcone wasn't validly appointed to his position. Sarcone's office sent the subpoena this summer seeking records for James' 2022 civil fraud case against President Trump. Trump lost that case in court, but says he was the victim of a witch hunt. He's pushed leaders of the Justice Department to go after James and other perceived adversaries. James' lawyers argue that since Sarcone wasn't confirmed by the U.S. Senate or appointed by federal judges in northern New York, he doesn't have proper authority. The issue is pending. Spokespeople for James and Sarcone declined to comment. James pleaded not guilty in a separate case in Virginia. In Albany, I'm Jimmy Vielkind for the New York Public News Network.
Nutrition assistance benefits for nearly 3 million New Yorkers are just days away from expiring. So the U.S. senators representing New York are demanding the Trump administration fund SNAP during the ongoing government shutdown. Democrats Chuck Schumer and Kirsten Gillibrand joined forces today to call on the Trump administration and Republicans to bring a bill to the floor that would fund SNAP and WIC, the Women, Infants, and Children program.
Put the bill on the floor for a full vote. It'll pass. It'll pass in a minute.
SNAP is the largest anti-hunger program in the United States, helping about 1 in 8 Americans put food on their table.
Both senators say the Keep SNAP and WIC funded Act of 2025 would keep SNAP benefits coming to millions of Americans during the shutdown. Democrats have also called on the Trump administration to release contingency funding to ensure uninterrupted SNAP payments.
Keep food flowing to American families. It will keep SNAP and WIC funded.
Despite having billions of dollars in emergency funding ready and available to pay for SNAP, the Trump administration is refusing to use those resources.
The Trump administration has said that it will not use a roughly $6 billion contingency fund to keep food aid flowing in November. And thank you to the New York Public News Network for that news. Now on to our feature report tonight. A recent investigation by The Intercept shows that the amount of pregnant and lactating mothers being taken into ICE detention has skyrocketed over the last year. The numbers are hard to detect given the Trump administration and the Department of Homeland Security are no longer required to publish reports on the conditions from ICE detention centers after the passing of the most recent federal spending bill. However, data obtained by immigration experts points towards a concerning pattern that is splitting up families nationwide and is illegal under ICE's 2021 guidelines. Radio Catskill's Genevieve Hartnett spoke with Juana Cortez de Torres, director of the Legal Immigrant Rights Project at Rural and Migrant Ministry in South Fallsburg, about any indications of these detentions in upstate New York and how all of us can be better neighbors to those who may be at risk.
Radio Catskill has covered, and in partnership with New York Focus, the increase in ICE detention in New York prisons and jails. But I also have been seeing reporting about the increased number of pregnant people there across the country in ICE detention. Are you aware of this pattern and have you seen it play out in upstate New York?
Right now, the access to statistical information from the administration is somewhat muffled. That's what I would call it. But there are instances where either United States pregnant women have been detained erroneously, in addition to individuals who may or may not be documented. So yes, there is an uptick there. But I also see that in certain instances, In one particular matter in New York, I have seen where discretion was used of a lactating mom. So I do see that. So we know that historically, under the Biden administration, there was a policy, right? There was a really an example of the use of discretion on the part of DHS. And perhaps that discretion is still in play, but what are we seeing is perhaps the arbitrariness of it. What I saw in one particular matter is that the lactating mom was detained. However, it was momentary, so to speak. And subsequently, there is monitoring by ICE. So that's for a lactating mom. For a pregnant mom, I have not had contact with a pregnant mom other than to do like my nationwide research and see what exactly is going on.
We've seen it explode over the last year, but as you pointed out, there were still these detentions happening even in the previous administrations, but it's in ICE's guidelines. That's not something they're allowed to do. I have the quote here, to avoid lactating, pregnant, and postpartum women by their 2021 guidelines. In your nationwide research or what you've seen in that instance in New York State, how do you find that they get around that, their legal requirements?
I wouldn't classify it as getting around. I think that their actions are arbitrary. And that's the thing. It's arbitrary, and therefore there's an abuse of power. And then therefore they're faced with now perhaps an individual that's lactating or postpartum and is pregnant, and they have to deal with it under whatever guidelines they think they have. Because if there's one thing that we do see is that although guidelines exist, those guidelines are perhaps not being utilized. They're not being done in a humanitarian way, right? That's the thing, right? The humanity that you would normally see in these scenarios, particularly if we classify these individuals, pregnant, lactating, or postpartum women, as the most, one of the most vulnerable groups aside from children, that's what you see. You see the lack of humanity of those individuals. And now, unfortunately, you will be racially profiled, right? And if you happen to fall into those other categories, you're going to be picked up.
You brought up children as well. And in terms of other reporting I've seen is that the average amount of time people in ICE detention centers, they spend about, it's anywhere between a week to sometimes a month. Mm-hmm. In terms of mothers, pregnant people, people that are lactating, where are they sent after being in jails and what happens to their children?
That is a tremendous and very terrible problem. Because what it requires is that the community, our other friends, then step up in these incredible roles as instant caregivers, right? And we're very fortunate that we have people like that, that will actually help family members and give them the support that they need. But the reality is that that should never be the case. That analysis of whether or not a child is going to be alone or perhaps in the care of someone that may or may not be fully vetted, that should not happen. Not in the United States of America. Absolutely not. And it is a problem. That I can tell you, it is a problem. And it, were it not for the communities, the educators, the friends, the babysitters, family members, they appear to be stepping up and doing this monumental task of taking a very traumatic situation and trying to make it less traumatic. Again, another highly vulnerable community, children.
A couple of reporters at the station have talked about the work that Rural and Migrant Ministry does with children in particular, but can you also talk about the work that you just do with families?
One of the things that we do is that we try to empower the next generation of young people by letting them know what their rights are, by teaching them the legislative tools and their legislators, by teaching them tools of social justice through art. And of course, by lending a hand, if it were to come to pass that mom or dad or caregiver, right, generic caregiver, gets detained. So we really try to work with other organizations that do what we call emergency family planning, where there is real intention in the individuals, in the mom or dad or the caregiver, and saying, God forbid I'm picked up, this is the person that will be in charge of my child, at least at a temporary level, right? Not a permanent level, because that requires a different type of legal proceeding, but at a minimum, to really teach parents that they should have a plan, that this particular climate calls for you to be prepared. And that's how we try to assist family, youth, and the adults as well.
For any of our listeners that might be activated about this, what are more active steps that they can take to protect people in their communities or to get more involved with rural and migrant ministry?
We had, I know you might have heard about our caravan. We had a caravan of empathy, and many, many people stood up with RMM during that time. And it spurred community action. And that action could take so many kind of, it could morph into so many wonderful things. One is that write to your senator, write to your congressman, write to your representative, communicate with them, indicate that this is not right, that what's going on is against the very fundamentals of our country. You know your neighbors. I mean, this is like some basic principles of, you know, love your neighbor, know your neighbor, know who the people are. You know, extend a hand. And the other thing, educate yourselves, become part of rapid response teams, where some people record what's going on in a particular raid, or actually start to advocate for people in their communities. Become an active member of your community. And also educate yourself. You could go online and do Know Your Rights training. And then you could train other members in your community. I mean, I've been a lawyer for over 30 years. And access to justice is so very, very important. And being able to teach other people about their rights is very powerful. And sometimes if the only takeaway that an individual gets is, you know, remain silent, don't open your door, ask for an attorney. Principle, the tenets of our Constitution must be followed. And the more people that say that, the more powerful we will be.
Well, Juana, thank you very, very much for joining us today and for all the work that you do.
Thank you. And thank you for extending a rural and migrant ministry this opportunity to talk about it. Thank you.
In Liberty, I'm Genevieve Hartnett for Radio Catskill.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
It is The Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole, and this is Election 2025. Radio Catskill's candidate interviews for key local races continues with the race for supervisor for the town of Thompson, New York. Scott Mace, Republican, is challenging incumbent supervisor Bill Reber Jr., a Democrat. Both candidates spoke with Radio Catskill's Patricio Rabayo about their records, priorities, and visions for the town's future. Last night we heard from the incumbent. Here's Patricio Rabayo with the challenger.
We're sitting down with the Thompson councilman, Scott Mace, who's running for town supervisor again this year. Scott Mace, Scott, welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks, Patricio. I appreciate that. Good to see you.
So good to see you too. And you know, this is not the first time you ran against Bill Reber for supervisor. This time around, I understand this is the third time you guys have faced off each other.
No, just second time.
Okay. So why did you want to put your hand in the ring again and want to become town supervisor again?
I think there's a lot of different ways to approach things, and I don't always agree with the current supervisor and the way he does things. You know, we've reaped the financial benefits of the casino for the last 5 years now, I think. But being a businessman and being a very busy businessman where I had to control my inventory, control my costs, control payroll, I'm in a position where we can go forward and make arrangements for what our future holds. We're really facing a challenge if these casinos in New York City come to fruition. We used to get about $2.6 million in aid. That was just 3 years ago. Now we're down to 2.01, you know, and that's just with Newburgh opening up. So we've already seen a 25% decrease in the revenue coming from them. I want to move forward, look at ways to save money, and challenge our department heads so they can save money and we can keep moving forward and growing as a community.
Well, that just leads into one of my next question is, what are some of the top concerns or problems you see is facing Thompson now, and how do you plan to address them?
Well, I think a lot of it's the rising costs, limited resources, and aging infrastructure. You know, we've done very well. We've had a couple of great grant writers that were able to secure a lot of grant money for us and either zero or very low interest financing. But there's so many projects that we need to keep moving forward. A lot of our infrastructure is 30, 40, 50 years old. And that's going to be a challenge if we're going to continue to grow. And this community is growing. And, you know, the whole dynamic of the community is changing. We need to all work together. And I think we need to draw everybody in the community together, because there's so much divisiveness right now. You know, there's so much hate and so much lies. And it makes me sick a lot of times. You know, and the only way to counteract that is love and truth. And then talk to each other and find some sort of compromise where everybody's happy and we can continue to move forward. And I just don't see a lot of that happening right now.
When you mentioned that, are you saying that on the current town board or just in politics generally?
Not even politics, just the community. You know, there's so many divisive sides where, you know, because the community's changing, a lot of people don't like the community's change. Well, you know, some businesses have actually been driven out because of backlash from some of these people. And we need to have those conversations to keep us moving forward. There's just no reason for it. We're all in the same boat. You know, if we're not all pulling in the same direction, then we're just going to sink. It's tough for me to watch. And I have a personality where I can do that. I can talk to people and I listen to people. You know, as a pharmacist for 35 years, you know, I had to listen first thing. You know, you had a problem, I had to listen. And then a lot of times I had to explain a very complex situation in terms that are easy to understand. And I think I can bring that to the supervisor position as well.
Right. So this come, you know, November 4th, folks vote you in. Come January, you're in the office. What are, say the top three things you're going to start working on right away?
Well, I think code enforcement. There's a lot of things that have been ignored. Maybe not ignored, but not a priority. And I think we need to work on code enforcement, keep our area beautiful. If we're going to be a tourism destination, then we need to look like it. We need to work with the casino and find ways to cross-promote our businesses that are in the community. We need to find a way to have Thompson be affordable for everybody. We want those businesses and families to thrive. You know, we've worked on the parks. We have three new parks now. They are all amazing. We have programming for them, for the kids and adults. And it's just a great place to go take a walk and relax as well. I'm a fiscally conservative guy. I'm a guy that wants to save. You know, I've watched our fund balances decrease the last couple of years. You know, it's nice to get a tax decrease, but we should be setting some of that aside for the future. And that's the kind of person I am. I want to start working on that and saving for our future. I want to get the programming for the parks. Keep working on that. We've done so much. We have craft days. We have swimming for the kids. We do cultural excursions. We go to the Bronx Zoo. We go to the Museum of Natural History. We offer all this stuff for the kids and the adults these days, because a lot of times they won't have access to those things unless we provide them for them. We never had that when I first got on the board. It's not all me doing it. I don't want to come across that this is all me doing this. You know, this is a group effort. But we need to keep moving our community forward.
How do you plan to ensure transparency and communication between residents and between the government to have that sort of group conversation going?
You have to be open to new ideas. I don't have all the answers. I don't proclaim to have all the answers. You need to listen. You know, and I've changed my mind on topics. When I thought I knew the answer, well, didn't think I knew the answer, I thought I knew how I was going to vote. But then you start talking to people, and you don't know everything. There's so many things, different ways to look at it. You know, one of the things I've had a couple of people talk about is different groups wanted to come before the town board and do a presentation to teach us about their cause or what's going on in the community. And those things are just turned down. You know, you're not going to make a presentation. No, we don't have time for this. If you want to do it, have a presentation somewhere, and if the board wants to go, they'll come see it. Well, that's not really what we're there for. We need to know all the facts about it, weigh those facts, and then make a good decision. And I want to do that more and more.
The town's comprehensive plan has been, you know, an ongoing topic. You're in discussions now to create another one. Is that correct?
Right. We're in the last part. We're bringing in a public hearing right now. We're gathering all the comments, and then we're going to move forward. So we're trying. Right. The last one was done, I think, in 1999, so it was overdue. And we want to have a future. We want to have a roadmap of where we want to take the community.
Right. You'll be part of the process, whether you would or not. Is that correct to say?
Well, I was not chosen to be on the comprehensive committee, even though I wanted to desperately. And I think there wasn't a lot of good representation from the board. I think Linda did a fantastic job there, but there should have been another town board member on there with differing opinions other than what that town board member had, but I was not allowed to be on that. So I've given my input, and I keep trying to give input. I keep talking to people. I keep taking phone calls from people about it, and then I'll bring those ideas forward as well. So,
well, if this is a chance, if you want to say, what is your vision for how it should guide growth and development in the town of Thompson?
Well, I think we'd need to, if we're not growing, we're dying, right? I mean, that's, you know, people don't want change, but if you're just stagnant, you're not going anywhere. And that's not good for anybody. There are areas where this development can be a great spot for it. You know, I think that we've done a good job. We have large developments that are being built, but they're being screened by natural trees and natural screening. So you don't just see a wall of houses. I think we need to look at our lake communities. I've owned for a couple of years now. I want to do like a zoning for the lake communities. Anytime you want to build or do something like community, you got to go to planning board and zoning board, get a variance. It's very time-consuming and expensive process. But if we had a lake district around our lakes, it would make it easier for people there, plus it would protect our lakes. I think that's important because that's our water, right? If we don't have our water, we don't have anything.
And now that, it's also a sense of, of tourism. It brings tourism. Absolutely. I know in the summers, Rock Hill is just busy with a lot of folks visiting.
I have people just a month or so ago, I had a person outside of my house at 6 o'clock in the morning. I was just walking the dog and they're like, we want to go down by lake. I'm like, well, this is a private lake, but what would you like to do? And he said, we're just looking for a spot to pray. And I said, absolutely, come down here. You know, they see the beauty and people watch. He actually circled the lake looking for a spot, but since there was no public access, you know, he was bold enough to ask me. But, you know, we need to develop that and encourage people to come up here and do these things. They come up here for the beauty. They come out of the city where everything's, you know, mortar and brick, and they want to see it. You know, just driving down the road, you know, it's funny. I drove uptown today, and I love the area. I mean, I grew up on the Canadian border where it's all wild, and I'm looking and I'm just seeing all these political signs, and I'm thinking, geez, I just can't wait for this, you know, election to be over so we can get this off and get our beauty back. But we need to. We need to encourage people to come to our community and spend their money here.
You mentioned some of the challenges that they're facing in Thompson now. And I think it's facing a lot of the towns and villages in Sullivan County, and such as infrastructure, aging infrastructure, housing, affordable housing, and sort of community engagement. Which one of those you think you would prioritize first going into your administration?
We definitely need to find some housing. I think the Golden Ridge development was something that happened when I first got on the board. You know, we had this overlay zone that we're able to put that in there. You know, it's great because it's insulated, so it doesn't look too urban around us, but it gives people some affordable housing. And it's a safe place for people to raise a family. You know, you go in there, you see everything from young families to older, retired folks. So it's a great way to do it. A lot of people aren't building houses. They can't afford the houses, can't afford the taxes on them. So this is a way for them to stay here, stay close to friends and family. Because so many people are leaving, and that's going to be tough. The infrastructure will continue to be a battle every day. You know, it's just always something that'll break. And, you know, we tease our water and sewer department because he's always got big bills every town board session because there's always something that needs to be upgraded. So we just need to keep focusing on that and keep working. We need to analyze every single dollar that we spend. You know, there's not a pot that we can just keep pulling out of for the rest of time. So we need to elect leaders who are committed to financial responsibility and they consider the priorities of the community that they're living in. You know, I'm 100% focused on being a supervisor. I don't have another business. I don't have any other potential conflicts. I'm just going to be a full-time supervisor. And I think I can bring a lot of more things and get a lot more things done. With all due respect to Bill, he's done some good things, absolutely. But we need to have somebody who's in there 100% of the time.
Right. Now, you know, you've been on the town board for a very long time. You know, what experience from your time as a councilperson will say, I guess, best prepare you for this role as supervisor?
I think that's a great question. The best puts me in there. I think just learning that I don't know everything and that when you are presented as a topic or a project by somebody, you need to look at the other side and see how it's going to affect the people around them, how it's going to affect the water and sewer, how it's going to affect the community. And I think that's been a lot of things. I've become a lot more, you know, I was in a retail setting where you make decisions continuously and, you know, 5 minutes to get something done. Here, I've learned that you got to look farther down the line, not just think about what's going to happen now. We got to think about what's going to happen in 5, 10, 20 years. And I've definitely learned to do that.
Right. Now, they said this is your second time facing off with Bill Reber Jr. What changed from it? Has anything changed from the last time you ran against him?
Well, I've been pretty much isolated from a lot of things on the board. That's been a little difficult for me. You know, when you're seen as a threat, you're not always brought into the fold on a lot of things. And I'm not that type of person. I can respect you that your opinion is different from me. We may disagree about something here and now, but that doesn't mean I don't respect you and like you going forward. And it's been very difficult for me the last few years because I've been isolated from a lot of those meetings and being allowed to do certain things. So I can either just accept it or I can do something about it. And I'm doing something about it. Everybody deserves to be heard and be respected. And it's not happening right now.
Well, Scott, we ask this to all our candidates when we end. When voters come either for early election or for Tuesday, November 4th, when they come to the polls, why should voters vote for you over your opponent?
Because I'm going to be 110% focused on the job in hand. I don't have any other conflicts like we talked about. I cannot promise any miracles, but I can promise honesty, fairness, hard work, and dedication while I'm sitting there.
Well, again, Scott, thank you so much for talking to us. We'll talk to Scott Mays, town council member for the town of Thompson and candidate for the town supervisor running against the incumbent Bill Reber Jr. in the upcoming election. Scott, as always, thank you so much for talking to us. I do really appreciate it.
No, thank you, Patricio. Appreciate you.
Thank you so much, Patricio. Hey, you can hear Patricio's interview with the incumbent in that race, Bill Reber. We spoke to him yesterday. That's up at WJFFradio.org. Video versions of both of these interviews are also up on Radio Catskill's YouTube channel. Go to YouTube.com. Subscribe to Radio Catskill. I'm Jason Dolp. Thank you so much for being here with me. That's it for tonight's show. Ramble Tamble is up at 7 with Claire back in the driver's seat, followed by Connect the Dots with David Christian at 9. But first, more news is on the way from The Daily. This is Radio Catskill.
How we make sense of the news and the world keeps changing. Who to trust and what's real are other moving targets. Let On the Media be your guide.
Saturday afternoon at 4. WJFF Jeffersonville, this is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.